Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to Media Confidential with me, Alan Rusbridger.
And me, Lionel Barber. Today, the Italian state broadcaster RAI is accused of censorship after the cancellation of an anti-fascist monologue that was due to be delivered on a TV show by renowned historian Antonio Scurati.
Italy's Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni is accused of turning RAI into a megaphone of her hard-right party, Brothers of Italy. So what's Meloni playing at? And is Italy following the route taken by Viktor Orban's Hungary and clamping down on the media?
We're joined by editor-in-chief of La Repubblica, Maurizio Molinari, to discuss censorship in the Italian media.
It's going to be an eventful episode, so remember to follow Media Confidential, your weekly dive behind the headlines in search of the truth in a rapidly shifting and contested media landscape. So Lionel, you're looking dapper in a suit, but you're in London.
I was wearing a tie, but I've taken it off for the podcast. Don't be too shocked.
Nothing
Alan.
Less.
Well, I am in London,
and there's a lot going on. We've got a lot to analyse and cram in. Shall I kick off?
I think you should.
So there are various straws in the wind about GB News. So the first is that our old friend Paul Marshall, who was the co-founder and co-funder of GB News, has stepped down from the board. And he's also incidentally stepped down from the ARC schools, whether this is a result of his colourful tweets being exposed. But it has the feeling of clearing the decks for a bid for the Telegraph. So that's one little interesting bit. Then I was really interested, I don't know if you caught this yesterday, Andrew Neil appeared before the House of Lords committee.
Sparky.
He was sparky, and he was really scathing about Ofcom's failure to do anything about it. Maybe we could hear a clip now.
What I didn't want it to become, I could see it was happening, which is why I left almost immediately, was an outlet for bizarre conspiracy theories or anti-vaxxers or basically the nutty end of politics.
That's Fox not News.
Which Fox News is, I say, very good in quotes at. And in America, there's a bigger market for that. There's no market in Britain beyond a hardcore of nutters. Am I allowed to say nutters? I just dead said nutters. I'm surprised how tolerant Ofcom has been of GB News. I think it may be because Ofcom knows that the rest of the broadcast universe is on the center-left, bit more left band, and so it gave GB News a bit more leeway to try and settle down. I am surprised that any regulator would allow politicians sitting in the House of Parliament to present TV programmes. Political TV programs. I mean, if I had stayed as chairman, it would never have happened because I would not have had any politician present a television show in the first place. And I would certainly never have allowed politicians to interview other politicians from the same party. I mean, I just find that incredible. And I think on these areas, Ofcom needs to find a backbone.
So there he is saying how amazed, how tolerant Ofcom has been over the years, and that they need to get a backbone quickly. That's quite a surprising intervention from Andrew.
Well, to a degree, yes. I mean, obviously, he was briefly associated. I mean, he was one of the front guys for GB News on the launch 3 years ago. And I think he was quite open about the extent of losses. I mean, they're running at...
He's lost 90 million, I think, so far.
Yeah, in total.
He's lost half of 90 million. Yeah.
And the most shocking thing was he said, you know, the audience essentially, it's the Nutter's audience.
It's just a sort of bunch of conspiracy theorists.
So that was quite shocking.
It was. And anyway, he's put in what he described as a front man, Lord Agnew, to take his place on the GB News panel. But then he was asked, I don't know if you caught this, but he was asked more generally about Marshall and whether he was a fit and proper owner of the Telegraph. And he sounded very scathing about that for an unusual reason. Did you hear that bit, Lyle?
I missed that bit, okay, so but I'm going to come to something else out, that he said was rather interesting too.
Anyway, this is what he said.
Mr. Marshall runs a hedge fund, and his American billionaire partner runs a hedge fund. That hedge fund is opening massive new offices in the city of London. What do hedge funds do? One of the things they do is they short stocks. Well, enterprising journalists, and I will be one that will be tricking them, will be very quickly looking at the coverage of these businesses in the Telegraph and what stocks are being shorted. When Mr. Farage was having his, if I can use a good Scottish word, stramash with NatWest, the Spectator, which is not a huge fan of Mr. Farage, but was wholly on his side against NatWest, if it had been owned by Mr. Marshall, it was discovered that his hedge fund was shorting NatWest. If he had been the owner of the Spectator at the time, it may have been unfair, there may have been no connection, but people would put two and two together. And I think it's a real issue that should hedge funds be allowed to own newspapers. I would say no.
So there's Andrew Neil essentially saying, if Marshall owns the Telegraph, because he's also a hedge fund manager, can you trust any of the coverage in the Spectator or the Telegraph? Because wouldn't the temptation be to use those papers to short the stocks that he's also shorting?
Yeah, and that raises a pretty high bar on ownership. And it's interesting, who is eligible? And I say this because of something else that Andrew said in his testimony, which is asked about what could the government do in terms of, to help the media. He said, get out of the way. Don't get involved. Well, of course, we know that the government very much did get involved as a result of pressure from the House of Lords and Tory MPs. The government did get involved by essentially blocking the bid, the UAE Gulf American bid to buy the Telegraph by saying we can't have foreign ownership.
What do you think about that point about it would be difficult for a hedge fund manager to own a newspaper because you couldn't really trust the city coverage?
I think that's too much. First of all, looking at, you know, hedge funds taking positions, you don't know if they're not, if it's under 3%, doesn't have to be disclosed. But, you know, the regulators are looking at, you know, opportunistic trading. I would say I don't see a bar, frankly.
So what do you think is Neil? I mean, if you had to read the tea leaves, where do you think Andrew Neil is and who he wants now to take over these titles?
Well, I haven't got through the Scottish tea leaves yet on this, and I haven't spoken to Andrew. But I don't know whether there's any personal animus toward, you know, between the two. I'm certain that Andrew would love to mount a leveraged buyout for the Telegraph, and he would see himself being one of the nation's eminent broadcasters, most experienced newspapers, former editor of the Sunday Times. I mean, he'd be perfect and a respectable person to own a newspaper group.
Well, watch that space. The other thing, I don't know if you caught this week, Lionel, was our so-called rival podcast, When It Hits the Fan, on the BBC, which is David Yellen, former editor of The Sun, and a colleague talking about the PR industry. And this week they had it entirely devoted to a fascinating interview with Matthew Freud, who is the sort of, you know, caput tutti capi, or whatever the... Is that the right Italian?
I think it's pretty good, but Maurizio Molinari, who's going to come on, will definitely have a few problems with your... and I'm going to introduce some Italian because, funnily enough, I was also talking about the Matthew Freud podcast last night at Tate Modern. But anyway, carry on.
So the clip that, Freud, pretty disobliging about his former father-in-law, Rupert Murdoch. And then there's a little bit at the end, and maybe we can hear this clip, in which they talk about Angela Rayner.
It is in the Labour Party's power to decide that they will not be bullied into jettisoning, I think, the most interesting person to come into politics. And I think the message that throwing Angela to the wolves just because the media want a scalp, you have to ask, what kind of people do we want in politics?
But I agree with you, Matthew, but if you're seeking the endorsement of the Sun, in that room where no one else is listening, we both know that the editor and the proprietor are likely to say, you know, Angela's got to go. So that's why I personally don't think Keir should even be in that room.
What country are we sitting in? I mean, really?
It's a proper democracy.
Really? That an editor and a proprietor should be allowed to dictate to an not yet elected government the terms of engagement?
But how it's worked for 30 years. I'm not saying it should do. I'm saying that's how it has.
That's a terrifying truth. Mm.
So there was the former editor of The Sun saying, look, this is how it happens in real life. The editor and the proprietor get in a room with Keir and they say, Angela's got to go. And Matthew Freud feigns astonishment and says, what, this is really happening in a democratic country? And Yellen says, well, you know, I'm not saying it's admirable, but that's the way it's happened for the last 30 years. I mean, it's just one of those moments where the sort of curtain is lifted by people who were in the room with Murdoch having those kind of conversations. And I thought it was quite a moment.
Yes, indeed. Of course, it does presume that the politician or the prime minister does accept the advice. And, you know, I'm sure proprietors and Rupert, they have said this, and it's not always been followed. I do have a little Matthew Freud story myself, you know, lifting the curtain, because that's what we do on this program.
That's what we do.
So late at night, I've had several Swiss beers in Davos at the World Economic Forum. I'm going back to my bed and I get a call on my cell phone and it's Matthew Freud. And he's very unhappy about a story which we've written, an interview with his client, Indira Nui of Pepsi Cola. And he says to me, well, you've got to change it and you've got to do this and that. And I'm saying, well, I don't think so. And then he says, no, I really think you need to. And I say, Matthew, we're not going to do this. Okay, capiche? And he says, capiche? Capiche? And he clearly thinks I'm referring to some Italian mafia person, which of course I wasn't. Needless to say, the story was not changed, but he did a good job for the client.
Yeah, it was got the feeling the way he operated was that he would do favours. You know, you suppress this and I'll give you something else equally good. But
throwed a damn good party. You know, Mick Jagger, who would not want to sit next to Mick Jagger?
These are circles that the editor of The Guardian never got invited to.
Well, you know, the FT, I mean, Jagger's publicly traded stock. But anyway, I'd like to just mention a story or two. What caught my eye, you know, Semaphore, set up by Ben Smith, former New York Times media correspondent, editor-in-chief BuzzFeed. He wrote a very interesting long piece on Matthias Döpfner, the CEO of Axel Springer, which, as you know, owns Politico, owns Bild tabloid newspaper, been on the podcast. And this is a story.
At one point was mooted as a bidder for the Telegraph.
Yeah, I never believed that, by the way. 20 years ago, he was interested in buying it. But this is a long profile about how Matthias Döpfner wants to be a big global media player, in with the American right, close to this man, Richard Grenell, who some people think Trump would have if he got back in office, a very hard right winger. But here's the snippet. Ben just throws in that Matthias Döpfner would like to buy the Wall Street Journal. Capiche.
Wow. Capiche. Your Italian is improving as this program. And do you believe that?
I think Matthias really wants to be bigger in America. He's got Politico America, Politico Europe. He wants to put those together. He's got Business Insider. I think the Wall Street Journal would be a great fit. And of course, Alan, because you follow these things and you've always been interested in Rupert Murdoch, who owns the Wall Street Journal, paid a lot of money. I wonder what will happen to the Journal and the other newspapers when Rupert finally goes to the great news desk in the sky.
The other intriguing story.
Oh, God, I think I know what you're going to say, Alan.
Well, talking of the Spectator, I mean, the back half of the Spectator has always been a place for reprobates and scoundrels, and one of its columnists is currently missing, having been accused of sexual wrongdoings. Convicted of, and his column is resting. But the sometime theatre critic, a man called Lloyd Evans. Did you want to tell the story of what he?
Well,
what
I'm
he
not
did?
Sure I do. I mean,
this is a family podcast.
I did read it. I mean, Mr. Evans describes how he attended a lecture by the historian, political philosopher Lea Uppi, who's an Albanian, at the London School of Economics professor. And he was so enraptured by her, not by what she was actually lecturing about, but her physical appearance, that he sort of fantasized about having a conversation with her, but he didn't get around to that. So he went off to the darker edges of Cambridge near the railway station to have some time with a prostitute.
That's very elegantly put.
I mean, it was the most... I couldn't quite work out publish this, Alan?
I would not have published it, no.
It was pretty offensive.
He was so aroused by the by the lecturer, he couldn't take his eyes off her.
Mm.
He got the name of the college wrong. He thought he was at Downing College, but in fact it was Darwin College. But, you know, that's a sort of minor detail. And then he had to go and seek relief, I believe is the word.
Well, that's one way of putting it. I think I want to move to higher ground immediately by pointing out that the Financial Times, my old organ, actually, I bet also, but the Financial Times weekend, weekend edition did the best possible riposte publishing a 2,000-word excellent essay by said history politics professor on Kant piece and political leadership on the Weekend Front last Saturday.
The same. She's an economics professor rather than...
She does political philosophy as well.
Okay, political philosophy.
Anyway, she's very smart, and it's an excellent essay. I'd commend the Weekend FT.
Well done. You've managed to retrieve what could have been a smutty interlude into a much more elevated way.
So today we're looking across the channel and beyond to Italy, where the air is thick with accusations of state interference in the media. Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni has defended a decision made by a Rai executive to cancel at the last minute a talk show appearance by distinguished historian Antonio Scurati. Scurati is a historian who's written a number of books on Mussolini. And he was booked to appear on the left-leaning channel Rai 3 to deliver a monologue ahead of April 25th, the day Italy commemorates its victory over fascism.
The monologue has since been published in full, and in it, Scurati claims that the Italian Prime Minister Giorgio Meloni, whose Brothers of Italy party has neo-fascist roots, has, and I quote, stubbornly stuck to the ideological line of her neo-fascist culture of origin. She distanced herself from the indefensible brutalities perpetrated by the regime, brackets the persecution of the Jews, without ever repudiating the fascist experience as a whole, end of quotes. In fact, Meloni published the speech on her own Facebook page while attacking Scurati for charging Rai €1,800 fee for his appearance on the show, which he has called propaganda.
Now, there's a real fear that by interfering with the output of a state media TV channel, Meloni could be leading Italy down the road taken by Viktor Orban's Hungary, where media is censored and independent journalists operate in a climate of fear and intimidation.
To shed some light on what's happening in the Italian media right now, we're joined by Maurizio Molinari. Maurizio is editor-in-chief for the Italian daily newspaper La Repubblica.
Maurizio, welcome to the podcast. Can you explain exactly what this controversy is about regarding
the abrupt removal of the historian Antonio Scurati's monologue on Rai Television at the weekend.
Thank you for having me. This episode happened last Saturday when the Italian public TV decided to forbid Mr. Antonio Scurati to pronounce in one of its program a monologue about the day of April 25, 1945. That is the day in which Italy was liberated by the Allied forces and fascism was defeated for the Italians. So the fascism was defeated, Hitler and the Nazis were defeated, and Italy became a free country again. Mr. Antonio Scurati, that is one of the most prominent Italian writer, is worldwide known for his books about Mussolini. And he tells in his book the story of Mussolini. I mean, his personal story, his political story, his ideas, views, all that. So he is the Italian writer that is worldwide, and of course also in Italy, known to be one of the best experts on Mussolini himself. That's why one public program in the radio, in Rai, in the public Italian TV, invited him to do this monologue that had to be very short, 5 minutes, 7 minutes, no more. Now, he had to do this during prime time in the evening, and in the morning, he received an email by the person that are in charge for the network, telling him that his contract with Rai was cut, then and he couldn't do the monologue anymore. It was the host of the program that revealed this censorship, and from that point on, of course, Italy discovered what happened, why there was so much reaction, why there were so many polemics about that. Because in these 7 minutes, in this very short monologue, first, Mr. Scurati was explaining what the Liberation Day is, actually, in a very didascalic, in a very simple and very inclusive way, so that also the younger people would be able to understand. But then finally, he was pointing out to the Prime Minister, Ms. Meloni, asking why she cannot pronounce one word, that is anti-fascism. Is it right that she, in several occasions, publicly condemned fascism, but she never, never pronounced the word anti-fascism? So the last line of the monologue was a question to Ms. Meloni, why you can't pronounce this word?
Right. So, Maurizio, before we talk about the roots of fascism and Meloni's party and state interference in Rai, I want to ask you a simple question. Has this ever happened before, that an independent expert or a commentator suddenly been cancelled on state television?
No, something like this, it never happened before. We were very much surprised by what happened. And I believe that the key reason of this was the opposition of herself, of Ms. Meloni, to discuss publicly this topic. We have to add and to explain to our listener that after the censorship by Rai, what happened was that Ms. Meloni posted on Facebook, on her account of Facebook, a personal attack against him, basically supporting the Rai decision, saying that he was getting too much money for 1 minute or 2 minute speech. So this was a personal attack by the Prime Minister against a writer. This never happened. I mean, I have been doing this job since I was 18 years old in this country, and never, never, never. a prime minister that singled out a rider publicly, it never happened.
So do you think, or do you know, that Miss Maloney directly interfered or lent on Rai executives to stop the broadcast? Do you know that?
We don't have the evidence of that. We can suppose that the senior officer of Rai that took the decision was trying to do what she would like to. But the only evidence that we have is that she openly supported the decision. We don't have the evidence that she took the first decision.
This is Media Confidential with Alan Rusbridger and me, Lionel Barber. And after the break, we'll be discussing further the fears about censorship of the Italian state media by the leader of the far-right government, Giorgia Meloni.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
A new episode of the Prospect podcast is out now, and this week Deputy Editor Ellen Halliday talks to thinker, writer and peace activist Avram Berg. This month's Prospect magazine features a piece by Berg in which he talks of a required paradigm shift in Israel if the government is to seek peace.
In 2 or 3 hours from our recording, we are entering into the most ancient Jewish holiday of Passover, which should be the celebration of liberty. And we have a traditional blessing which says, Chag Sameach, happy holiday. You cannot say happy. Who can be happy? So today I bumped into somebody in the street and I didn't know what to say. And she said, let it be less melancholic. Let it be less sad. And I think that's the mood of the country. Everybody is not looking for happiness, but less sadness.
So follow the Prospect podcast wherever you get your podcasts. And while you're listening to that podcast, why not take out a digital subscription to Prospect and enjoy a 1 month free trial to our digital content? You'll immediately get full access to rigorously fact-checked, truly independent analysis and perspectives. There's no commitment. You can cancel at any time. To take advantage of this offer, visit our website or go to your favorite search engine and search for Prospect Magazine Subscription.
And now back to our conversation with Maurizio Molinari.
Maurizio, just for the benefit of British listeners, how independent is Rai of government? Historically, how independent has it been?
Historically, the public TV in Italy has always been under the influence of both opposition and government. There was a kind of agreement between the two sides in a way that most of the information was going in favor of or was conditioned by the government, but always was a corner of opinion guaranteed for the opposition. So basically, it was a balance between the two sides. What we have to say is that since this government came to power, the space, the room for the opposition's ideas was reduced more and more every single day.
Is this, I mean, people are now comparing Italy with Hungary. and that there's kind of clampdown on media in Hungary. I mean, is this the direction that you and your colleagues fear that Meloni wants to go down? Is this the playbook?
This is the fear that we have, yes. Why we have this fear? Because since she came to power, we saw her wanting to give more and more importance, relevance, and power to the executive branch of the government. When there was a decision to be taken about the recovery plan, the next EU generation, she decided to take away the responsibility from the finance minister, that is what happens in Germany and France, for instance, and to put in her own hand in the office of the prime minister. When there was a decision to be taken about the new Italian initiative for Africa, instead of giving this responsibility to the foreign affairs ministry, as should have been done, she decided again to put this initiative in the hands of the prime minister's office. And in terms of public information, more and more, she is directing the newspapers that are closer to her, basically to spread her views, to copycat her views, just to copy, not even to elaborate. So it's a kind of puzzle. And if you put all the pieces together, yes, we may have the impression that we are going step by step in the direction of Hungary. But if this was the impression until a few days ago, this was a jump step. This was something bigger than usual. Because, again, she pointed out a rider. And I know Antonio Spuradi very well. He writes for us. I spoke with him immediately after this happened. His voice was trembling. I was shocked. Why the voice was trembling? Because if you are a citizen, a writer, a doctor, an engineer, and you have the head of the government that is publicly speaking against you, what do you do? How do you defend yourself? Yeah. I mean, here the point is that in the post that she made on Facebook, she didn't contest it. The ideas of Mr. Scurati, but Mr. Scurati himself. This is the difference. I mean, in democracy, it's legitimate that a political leader express a different opinion from a public figure, say, right, or a journalist. But when a political leader, the head of the government, attacks the person, not the ideas, we are entering in uncharted waters, in Italian terms.
So, Maurizio, to be clear, I am not carrying water for the Meloni government. What I would say is that we are in a political season. The European Parliament elections are coming up. They're very important. And Antonio Scurati, distinguished historian, was really challenging Miss Meloni to make a big political statement on this very special day, April 25th. Miss Meloni says she has disavowed Mussolini. She has disavowed the fascist past. But what he was doing was asking her for something extra to essentially endorse an anti-fascist stand. So that was quite a big statement. But as you say, he was entitled. He'd been under contract to deliver this monologue, and he was suddenly cancelled. Is that a fair assessment?
Yes, and I believe that the reason why this is a public topic in this country is because everyone knows, every Italian students that comes out from our public schools, we know, we learn since we are very young, that our constitution is based on anti-fascism. The basic values out of which the constitution was written was anti-fascism. Italy was on the wrong side during the war. Italy was fighting along the Nazis. So the legitimacy of the Italian democracy came from those Italians that decided to fight against fascism. This is why Italy became a founding partner of the European Union. This is why Italy was admitted in NATO. This is why Italy is a Western democracy. Because there were many Italians that decided to fight against the public government that was supporting Hitler. So the basic of the Italian Republic is anti-fascism. So is of course is a good step. It's very important that she condemned fascism, and we're very pleased, and we thank her publicly, not only us but also people that didn't vote for her. But the problem is why she's not sharing the value of anti-fascism on which this republic was created.
Maurizio, you say you've been around for a long time. You lived through the Berlusconi years, which were in a different way, fairly bleak in terms of the media. How does this compare with the Berlusconi years?
I'd say that there is no comparison here to be made, to be honest. Yes, Berlusconi was a very strong leader. Yes, we can maybe say that Berlusconi was the first big populist leader in this country. Yes, Berlusconi had a narrative very negative on institutions, on the rule of law. Yes, he believed that he as a person was more important than his voters, more important of the institution of the Republic, but he never blinked on the basic values of who was on the right side and on the wrong side during World War II, and he never blinked on topic of anti-fascism, never.
But he had his own media companies, which he was not afraid of using to his own political ends.
Which had an enormous market share in the TV in Italy.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, I'm not defending Berlusconi. I'm simply saying that here we're facing a different phenomenon. Also, the previous leader of the party out of which the party of Miss Berlusconi was, of Miss Meloni was created, it was Gianfranco Fini, who was the leader of Alleanza Nazionale, also himself came out from the post-fascist tradition. But he was very clear to say that was not only against fascism, but he recognized the importance of anti-fascism. So even in the tradition of post-fascist politics, if we may say, she is an exception.
Can I ask you about other calls amongst certain MPs of the hard right to put forward legislation to jail journalists? Can you talk about that a bit and whether it's a really serious threat?
There was a proposal made in Parliament 2 weeks ago by several MP of Ms. Meloni party that their proposal was to punish journalists responsible for defamation even with jail. So in the most serious cases, jail should have been considered as the last option to punish them. There was a debate in Parliament and the proposal was rejected. To be honest, it was rejected by an initiative of another member of the same party. So there was a split inside the party of Ms. Meloni. Two people were in favor and opened the discussion, and another one was very much against. And at the end, when they voted, was the against position that prevailed. But yes, there was this initiative. And again, also to have this debate was in Parliament was an unprecedented situation for all of us.
So I'm glad to say that we won't be paying you a visit in Clink in Rome anytime soon, or Milan. But just on a different matter, Maurizio, I mean, you've got your own problem with your own journalists who've accused you of actually censoring a story yourself. Now, I speak as a fellow editor, and we're sitting next to Alan here, who edited The Guardian for 20 years. I did 14. And there were some stories that at the last minute, I certainly said, well, they don't pass muster, so we're not publishing. That was the right I had. And often I would discuss that with colleagues before I made that decision. But what's the story with your with you facing a revolt in your newsroom? What's going on?
You know, I believe strongly in open debate, discussion, among different ideas. the more different ideas and positions we have in the newsroom, the more the newsroom is strong. If everyone says the same and has the same opinion, the job for the editor-in-chief is more difficult. For the editor-in-chief to have different opinions inside the newsroom is a signal of intellectual strength. So all that said, the debate was about my decision to change in the last minute a story that had to be published in our financial section.
And what was the story about?
The story was about the economic interaction between Italian companies and French companies. The fact was that the article was made and written in a different way from what I asked it for. And now, newspapers have to be a free place and free lab of ideas, but at the end of the story, are ruled by a chain of command. The only way for a newspaper to come out is to respect the chain of command. If the chain of command is not respected, and if an editor-in-chief asks for something, and this is not what is going to happen, is a serious problem of internal regulation, if I may say.
Well, Maurizio, we editors have to stick together, but I still have to ask you, did this story also feature references to your owner, Exor?
Not to Exor, but it was a reference to Stellantis, because Stellantis is one of the company that is made out of agreement with one between Italian companies and French companies. The idea that I had, and they actually came out in a following piece, was that when the companies, they work together without interference by governments, they work very well. And that the problem comes out when the governments, it may be the Italian or the French, they interfere too much. This was my personal idea, and I believe is based on a lot of evidences.
Let me say thank you for answering those questions from a young reporter who's trying to do his job.
Thank you for asking.
I believe that the media generally, having witnessed this acts of censorship against Scurati, everyone then published the text. Is that right? Or several media outlets published the text. So that was a kind of solidarity.
Yes. Several media published the text. He was able to read publicly the text. I have to say that also several European media, in France, in Germany, in Poland, paid very much attention, in Belgium and in UK as well, paid very much attention to this story. And I believe that the reason this happened is that because all of them, they perceive that it's a question that has to do with the rule of law in this country.
Maurizio Molinari, thank you so much for coming on the podcast, and good luck going forward, not least with your own newsroom. Well, Alan, I think this is a little bit more than a storm in an Italian teacup, because there's a deep resonance about April 25th and the defeat of fascism, and the idea that at the very last minute somebody in the state broadcaster pulls the plug on a monologue by a distinguished historian, maybe even slightly of the left standing or whatever, it does set something of a precedent.
Yeah, you can see the fear of Hungary. You can look at the example of Poland, where the new government is trying to unpick the corruption of Polish broadcasting and try and restore democracy through the media as well as through government. Nothing like that as bad in this country, but it makes you think about the BBC and the need to treasure the complete independence of the BBC, because you can see how governments want to get control of media if you let them, and it's heartening that the Italian journalist just stood up and said, well, we're not having it.
Yes, and I got a call at the weekend by an Italian friend who said, this is a remarkable moment, it's never happened before, you should know about it, which is one of the reasons when you and I talked at the weekend that we should do this, because in some ways, and we found this at the Financial Times, Italy does look to outside sometimes the sort of external constraint that they want solidarity. They feel they need that just to stand up. I should add on a slightly lighter note. This isn't the first time of independent of people kind of interfering in the content on Rai. I just did my research. You'll be glad to hear on. And there was a stark a chef who did a program called Ready Steady Cook, was, you know, stormed off the scene because he was told that he couldn't actually include foreign recipes.
That sounds too good to be true, but I'll take your word for it. I mean, it makes me want to go back and revisit Meloni, because when she came in, people said, oh, well, she's not quite as bad as we thought she was, and she would be, and that she's behaving quite sort of sensibly and moderately. But this is ugly.
It is. It's interesting because she's got actually quite a good economic record. Italian borrowing costs have fallen. The economy is actually doing reasonably well. And she's followed the advice of her predecessor, Mario Draghi, who said, just do two things. Love the euro and stay with the Americans on Ukraine. The rest of it, you know, that's your show. Well, of course, the problem is the rest of it, if she's interfering or leaning on the state broadcaster, that's a problem.
Finally, I thought he was remarkably cheerful, considering he just had a vote of no confidence by his own staff. You approach that very delicately, but he's obviously bearing it well.
I could tell I'd be crying into my cornflakes if I'd had a vote of no confidence. There we are.
Can you think of a recent example in British journalism where the staff have had a vote of no confidence?
I certainly hope not. No. I think I was close to one in 2011.
What did you do then?
I think I was pushing hard on wage restraint, Alan.
Wage restraint. So you're being mean. You were being tight. Well, it's quite right. I'm with the journalists.
I did escape it, though, so I didn't have to cry into my cornflakes.
That's all from Media Confidential. A massive thank you to Maurizio Molinari for joining us. We'll be back next week. And remember to follow Media Confidential wherever you get your podcasts, and join us next week for more invaluable analysis.
You can send any questions or comments to mediaconfidential@prospectmagazine.co.uk, or get in touch on X, formerly Twitter. We are at MediaConfPod. Thank you also for listening to Media Confidential, brought to you by Prospect Magazine and Fresh Air. The producer is Martin Points Roberts.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.